Chris.
The Simpsons, are they happy or unhappy with their lives on balance?
Are we talking the proper Simpsons seasons 1 to 9?
Yeah.
7.
Probably generally, I would say relatively happy.
That's interesting. Okay. I've got to update Ghosty.
Yeah, we had that discussion. Right, we're recording now, by the way.
I think Marge Simpson is something of a tragic character.
And you see, it was Marge that was the one I said was possibly the unhappy, or at least, you know, putting up with things. Yeah.
Well, although Lisa's probably very unhappy in sort of like a systemic way. Actually, that's interesting. Maybe the Simpsons is like a good, like, what's the word that's not microcosm? Microcosm.
Yeah.
Of male privilege in that it's like. Yeah, the men are all like la di da di da, things are great, and then the women.
Yeah, that's where American Dad follows that particular role. But that's what was not American Dad, Family Guy. And I was saying before we started recording, American Dad goes the other way with that, and it's a different 50s sitcom trope in that the wife is the ditzy blonde sort of thing. Mm. So it's still not really.
So my point was that all sitcoms. The characters are flawed and limited. Like Marge is unfulfilled. She is capable of being more than, not more is incorrect, but like her role is limiting compared to her faculties or whatever. But all the characters find fulfillment with it. They find it's life, really. You find fulfillment and joy within your limitations. ideally.
And we are not the target in this.
Yeah.
For me, in The Simpsons, they do find joy and fulfillment, and because Ghosty was saying that The Office is sadder than The Simpsons is sadder than The Office, The American Office. Yeah, he was saying in The American Office they're much happier, and to me, if I had to, I think that fundamentally they find joy in both, but The Office is sadder than The Simpsons.
Yes. For me. But I don't know how much of that is like aesthetics and cartoonishness.
Yeah, the reality of a life.
Because Homer literally fulfills all, you know, he's an astronaut, he's a fucking footballer, but an NFL player, you know, he can't remember where he becomes an NFL, you know what I mean? Like, whereas Michael in The Office is, he's only ever, that's the best his life is ever going to get.
I kind of feel like Homer Simpson and Joe Rogan are very much birds of a feather. like they are like the American everyman in that way. Mm, do you know what I mean? Like bald, and basically a bit of a dimwit, but have this like weird.
That's the genius of Trump. Like Trump manages to appear that.
Yes, and appeal to
he has the dumbness down. I don't think he's quite as dumb as, you know, the liberals would like to think, but like, you know, he's pretty dumb. But he's not an everyman, and yet he manages to inhabit that aesthetic.
It's the same grift as Farage.
Yes, it's the pound for pound, it's the same grift as Farage and to Boris Johnson to a degree, you know, like
Boris Johnson as well,
it's that same. I think the thing is with Boris Johnson is that he's very posh. Like elite Farage has this thing where he's like, oh, I'm having a pint, I'm having a fag.
I think we have that residual subservience to like an affable toff will be like, you know, yes, my lord. You know, it's like, oh, it's the local gentry.
Yeah, that's exactly what our last MP was, Rees Mogg.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. And now he's like, I believe he's now a reality TV person or something.
Oh, as well as,
I think he's got like a at home with the cocksuckers or whatever, you know.
Cocks,
that's a bit unfair to cocksuckers, really. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Very unfair, actually. I can we just reestablish that on the show? We very much approve of cocksuckers.
Yeah, we're pro cocksucking.
In
fact, I don't think Rees Mogg has sucked a cock in his life, to be honest. And maybe he'd loosen.
I don't know. He was at public school.
Oh, public school. Yeah.
Pig's cock, maybe.
I was going to say, I think it's interesting that like Thatcher kind of was an everyman, every woman, if you prefer.
Yes.
In terms of her upbringing, so like she was.
Yeah, she was much more middle class than most Tories.
Yeah, lower middle class. Yeah, and yet didn't cultivate that. She cultivated
John Major as well.
I don't know his upbringing. Was he
left school at 16.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he presents
despite
himself...
being a Tory leader, he wasn't a complete cunt.
Yeah,
he was a little bit 90%, you know.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good for any MP we've ever had in my life.
I mean, to the left of Starmer.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah, yeah. Well, so is that
yeah, but also
scarily enough, you know.
John Major was a smart guy. I mean, you know, we might not necessarily have the same politics, but like he was diplomatic. He was someone that could stand on the international stage and not cause an embarrassment.
I've probably said this in recording before, but the Northern Irish peace process, he was largely responsible for that, and then Blair came in and took all the credit.
Mm. Well, as they did over Mo Mullum as well.
Yeah,
it's like, oh yeah, and Mo Mullum helped us a bit would be the thing that Blair has put forward, you know, since then.
Yeah.
And he's the mouth of Sauron as well. You know?
I at least hoped that Starmer would be smarter than he is.
No, he's short to be really thick.
You know,
He's not even good at being a puppet for the people that are controlling him.
He's president man.
He is so president man.
As Avasarala says, that a fucking bobblehead.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And the thing is, I bought the grift, right? He spoke proper. He wore a well fitting suit. He said he knows what long words mean, and I thought, you know what? I get the Starmer's to the right of the Labour Party. He's the right of me, but at least it's nice having a smart person in charge. Might not agree with him, but at least he's not going to do
the old adult in the room.
Yes.
Bullshit.
And
no, unfortunately.
Whoops! I keep falling for these things. I try. I give
well,
too
the
many.
Thing is, the thing that the thing
well,
that
it's a poor choice. So what are you going to do? You know.
Yeah, but I feel particularly guilty because I don't usually tactical vote, and I did in this election, and now I feel stupid.
The thing that confuses me is like he was the Queen's Counsel, King's Counsel, whatever, like you know, and a barrister. Like you've got to be fairly smart to just
you'd think so
become that.
You'd think he'd be able to think on his feet and talk probably.
Yeah,
he can't.
Getting to positions of that height. A lot of going to be about connections for sure, but he's got to have a. But I think there's different kinds of intelligence. I just think he's
Well, what I was going to say is that regarding what I just said, actually, about thinking on your feet and being able to talk, I think the problem is people like that, especially in our politics, Western politics in general, is they're not able to. They've got to be guarded and thinking about everything they say 10 times before they say it now.
Yeah,
because they've got to remember who's paying for everything and who's pulling the strings.
Yeah.
And they're not allowed to say what they think at all. They're not allowed to react to things. They've got to keep a line in their head, you know.
Yeah, and also the people that Starmer was like he appeals to judges, you know, like he is in those circles. He's not in our circles.
You know, he
might be great in front of a judge, but shit in front of anything else. Yeah. You know, it's. Yeah, you know, maybe he was a very good KQC or whatever the letter is, but like,
KDE,
I guess that, KDE, plasma, whatever it is, XFCE, you know. But I guess being a good public prosecutor doesn't make you. Is it no? Sorry, King's Queen's.
It was the. It was the director of public prosecution, wasn't he?
Yeah. Maybe that has no bearing on how you are as a politician.
Right. I want to make a I wouldn't call it an apology or a correction. It's more of a slight tweaking of something that we've said a lot, and it's literally regarding Chausseting. Chausseting might be more generic than we thought.
How do you mean?
Rather than being a specific service, I think it's like what belters call video services. So rather than being YouTube or PeerTube or whatever, or even
it's an activity. Yeah. Rather, it's like streaming.
Yeah, it kind of covers like their. It's like their version of Intership Communication uses it as well. It's like where's the video conferencing stroke video recording thing? There it is, Chausseting.
Is it a bit like when we have Jitsi in the corner of the screen when we do our show? Is it a
no,
bit
that's
like,
branding. Or... Chausseting is a belter
a term like streaming or
The thing that makes me think about that is that the show's the thing looks like it's branding.
No, it if does, you look at their interfaces on built on ships, they have that for other stuff. It's like the window. It's like the what do you call the thing? I don't use them, so I forgot what they're called. The window title bar, bars. Is that what they're called? Title bar. It's kind of like the title bar on their stuff. Yeah.
So
because remember, we're mostly what we see is probably Martian tech. Almost everything we see is probably Martian tech, primarily because of like the Rosinantian stuff, followed by Earth tech, which probably in turn encompasses like the news services and stuff. Then the belters are sort of last, and it's only this series we've seen a lot more belter-built technology in the form of the Behemoth and you know, little side things like slingshot guys stream, you know.
Before we get into the content of the show, Chris, to what extent did we hoodwink you?
Whoa, 90%. You got
really okay.
Oh, you're really going to hate us by the end of this series, then.
Absolute bastards. Oh, hang on a minute. Why is Miller actually alive?
Miller is alive.
We had this conversation, haven't we?
But you'll know when you watch the next episode. So, never mind this. Forget it. Get put out of your head throughout this episode. But next episode, when you're watching it, there'll be a moment where you'll think of us.
Fuck's sake. Is it do people who have died get brought back to life or something? I don't know. Anyway, before we also get into
it's very specific. You will think of us though when you get there. Anyway.
God, you guys. I kind of like there was something when I was watching that made me think, yes, because here's the thing that I should have picked up on, and I didn't until it was too late. You were trying to deliberately temper my expectations as to whether or not Kamina Drummer was alive, whereas usually you would, under normal circumstances, would have poker faced that.
I don't know if in that situation, in situations where I feel it to be semantically clear, like the filmmakers have told us something without explicitly spelling it. Because, yeah, when she gets crushed by that, we are supposed to think she's dead, I think. When she gets crushed and she goes limp, like, that is filmmaker talk for she's a fucking goner.
And also, Ashford says, if it rolls one way, I'm dead. If it rolls the other way, you're dead.
Yeah,
you
know? Had she been dead, I think we would have reacted how we did because the filmmakers made it clear that she's dead.
Yeah, I think they were lying to us without any future information. It was Drummer sacrificed herself to save Ashford and the ship.
Well, I mean, I thought she was alive, didn't I?
You did, yes.
Yeah, you had it right. Yeah.
But I mean, think back to the Spike incident and how weird that was. He should have been dead, you know.
Well, we concluded that the Spike moved. It was a
cinematographical error.
Yeah.
Like a typo, but in cinema and films.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because like, I guess the whole moved. Yeah. But I also got a note. Uh-oh. Oh, by the way, yeah, just for the benefit of folks at home. What did I do when I found out that Kamina Drummer was still alive?
Oh, you sent us a little message that said...
That night?
Yeah, it was that night. You absolute fuck faces, all in capitals, with with a picture of Kamina in a hospital bed with her eyes open.
Drew,
for some reason, reacted with a little dancer. And I reacted with the Bugs Bunny going, "Am I a stinker?"
Yeah. And it's like, 'cause I knew you guys would be fucking giggling like schoolgirls at that.
Yes.
See, this is it. This is why I feel like this is why I believe the best in politicians.
Don't lump us in with them, man. We knew you would find the truth. We weren't selling you on anything that wouldn't be resolved within a.
It's all good fun, but my fuck. I am gullible sometimes, you know.
I'm extremely gullible, yeah.
You know, I think we said gullible before, in the dictionary, there's a picture of both of you together.
we literally did that last time. But no, I think this is what we said last time. I would rather be gullible. I'd rather trust people and get fucked over than go through my life not being trusting.
I agree, but it's hard sometimes. Not here, by the way. This is all funny.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
But it makes me feel like...
It hurts.
Yeah.
It leaves you open to pain, but it also leaves you open to joy.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us have experienced a fair amount of pain at this point in our lives.
Yeah.
So, but...
ain't I a stinker? That was the first thing coming to my head when you said yeah. Actually, the Bugs Bunny thing. I love that.
Yeah, you got me. But I, well,
like I say, halfway through ish, three quarters of the way through the next episode, think of us.
Oh my god. Okay, I've got another note that's sort of out of show context. Were the Mormons right all along?
In what way?
Getting the fuck out of the solar system.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, in that sense, yeah.
Yeah, but they weren't all I don't think. I don't think every Mormon... Well, maybe they were. How many of them are there? Yeah. Ship.
Yeah, but the thing is, I was thinking, right, like, what if the Nauvoo had been completed and they set off their voyage, you know, maybe at some point last season... Oh, not last season, before the ring was constructed.
Yeah.
And then they go on to live a happy future. Maybe they were right all along.
Mm.
Is that part of the tragic comedy of the Mormons?
Maybe.
Actually, yeah, it turns out this time they were right. And
it's not that I have nothing to say. I'm poker facing this bit. We'll return to this after the next episode.
Maybe God does exist and he was actually telling the Mormons what to do. Is it God that Mormons listen to?
Yeah,
I guess. Or like that James Smith guy or whatever. I don't know. The hat, the guy that looks into the hat with the magic stones. But yeah, maybe the Nauvoo was a calling. Maybe it was a proto molecule. Maybe the Mormons were like, oh, you know, it's calling.
I was going to say, but Holden, in this episode, Holden tells us he thinks we've got the nature of the proto molecule all wrong anyway, doesn't he? But let's not jump ahead. Let's continue with the because that's
quite... Well, they do the roadside picnic thing of like, we're ants to this civilization. It doesn't give a shit about us.
Okay, we're doing the whole thing then. That's good. Do it. You're fair enough. Yeah. Also, it points out that they're fighting something. Remember, I said already that there's a hint that they're fighting against somebody or something else, and that's further expounded in this episode. Now,
this is interesting because I'm still not sure if time travel comes into the world of the Expanse because.
Through your disappearing buddy. You've just become a chair.
I'll wave my hand every now and then.
Oh yeah, because Holden does mention that the civilization that sent out the proto-molecule died billions of years ago or something like that.
He says that they're long gone. Yeah, it's a graveyard.
And it's like, could it be that the proto-molecule is fired out as like a plan B, and it goes out, it finds something that it can sort of cling to and evolve with.
Oh, you mean and then connect one of these rings to whatever the event was that killed them or something? Well,
presumably, if this ring and this station are connected to lots of different either things phenomenally far away or things in different times... Well, like, even if it's phenomenally far away, if it's a galaxy away or a couple of galaxies away...
Are you saying maybe a galaxy far, far away?
Far, far away. Maybe a long time ago as well, yeah. You're wearing the wrong shirt for that, though.
Yeah, I'm today, sorry. I should be embarrassed to wear this at the moment, actually.
Oh, yes. Is that an American football shirt?
Yeah, yeah. And the Browns have done incredibly badly again.
Oh, well, I come from a family of Gwent Dragon supporters, if you know rugby, and that's always depressing.
Well, it's not real rugby, though, is it? It's rugby league.
No, rugby union.
Is it union?
Oh, it's union,
I thought, I thought when they had the fancy names like that, it was always league.
Well,
it does lean that way. It does lean that way. But,
yeah. League does lean that way, but it's Dragons, Ospreys, Scarlets, Blues, I think, are the Welsh teams.
Oh, right, okay.
So not like Dragons is not, is the, you know, most fancy of them, but it's Newport, and Newport has a lot of Dragonsy stuff. Is Newport is the Dragons bit of Wales, I think, maybe.
Wouldn't Dragon Computers set up in Gwent area somewhere?
Dragon Taxis, famously mentioned in the GLC songs.
What?
Dragon Taxis.
No, the other part.
No, the other part.
oh, you know Goldie Look and Chain?
Right. I thought you meant the Greater London Council for some reason.
That's all I could come up with as well, yeah.
Yeah. The Greater London Council tax.
I didn't realize that.
They operate in Newport, yeah.
Makes sense.
But yeah, like if you're traveling from galaxy to galaxy, you need to be doing something wibbly with time, right?
Well, this is where space-time being space-time comes in. Like if you're, if you're traveling a very far distance, time becomes an issue one way or the other. Either it takes an incredibly long amount of time to get there, or you get there quicker, but then relativity does some bullshit.
Yeah. So presumably there's some kind of... Well, if it is the case that they're traveling from galaxy to, you know, vast, incomprehensible distances, then my guess would be that time travel does come into it. But then to what degree?
It depends what you mean when I say the relativity bullshit. Like, if they're traveling very fast, like, you know, close to speed of light, they're going to be time. They will experience time differently than people on the planet they left and people on the planet they're going to. So in that sense, they're time traveling. They will experience time differently, which is different from time travel, which, as far as we know, is like physically impossible, like fundamentally impossible.
Yeah, but then it might happen in ways that we're not sure as well either. Like the molecule might get blasted into space. And then it might do something that I can't think about right now. It might resurrect
something
the dead.
I can't think about right now because my point was really my brain is set up not to comprehend time travel. Sorry.
There's kind of two categories of time travel we can talk about, just like relativity happening or like magic, you know, space magic time travel, actually literally going forwards and backwards in time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Back to the Future style.
Yeah.
Or Doctor Who, since she said wibbly.
Wibbly,
go back and fuck your own mum.
Of course you'll go there.
Don't give me that look. That's what Back to the Future.
Yeah, that's true.
He wants to fuck her son.
She does get a wee bit horny for him, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's because he looks like his dad, right?
No, he doesn't, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. It looks like
not remotely. He looks like James Fox. Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, he does look a bit like Michael J. Fox.
Quite a bit like him.
Yeah. Oddly enough, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah, and the professor looks a little bit like Christopher Lloyd was, you know. But then again, a lot of people look like Christopher Lloyd, actually.
I don't see that.
You don't see it? Okay. Maybe if you watch it again.
No.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, to be fair, he looks a lot older than Christopher Lloyd.
That's true, yeah. He does.
Yeah, like Christopher Lloyd, but older, yeah.
Space aliens, dead.
Oh, and also one thing as well, right, since we're talking about all of this. You know, boring scientist man? I don't think he's that boring.
I never did. I quite like him. He is kind of boring.
Okay,
but
he's my character that's the equivalent of Drew's dislike character then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just don't like him. I mean, I don't wish him to be dead like you do with people usually, but I just don't like him.
all I'm saying is the graph got what he deserved.
I mean, I think you are happy with DeGraff dying just because he's a liberal, right?
Or it's whatever. There's more to it than that, but that's in the pot, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from with that. So when boring science guy is he's doing all the calculations and all that kind of stuff, is he doing it on the behemoth or is he doing it on the Thomas Prince and then chatting to the behemoth?
Not sure. Could be either.
No, he's on the Thomas Prince because he gets told to stay behind.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh,
I remember they're talking to him over shoulder thing.
Yeah, right. Gotcha. Okay. I thought that might be the case because there's no one around. Like, he's the only one in.
Yeah, he's just sort of standing talking to himself, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whilst Ashford and the Lucas or something, the name of the
Gregory? Commander
guy. No, Gregory's the other bridge officer guy. What's the name of the officer? The one that went over to the. Yeah, Lucas. It is Lucas. Captain Lucas is the guy that went over. Yeah. Is he
the man bun guy?
Wait a minute. It could be. No, it's Kunis. Kunis is the man bun guy.
Kunis is man bun
guy. Lucas is the MCRN one, I think.
I'll be honest. I wish I looked that good in a man bun. Particularly from the back.
I think you look good in a man bun.
It's okay, but
as much as anybody can.
Yeah, yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not.
Drew, come to us. Walk towards the light.
I'm not. Yeah, like I'm not claiming that man buns are in any way acceptable in polite society. But if I have it, I think it's my face shape. Is if I have the man bun on the back, A, it's harder to do, but also it's harder to manipulate around the back of your head than it is to do on the top of your head.
This is true.
Yeah. But also, I think my face is quite long.
Kunis has got a long face. Kunis has got a long, but then the actor with Kunis has got a long face, but he's also got one of those, like a beard.
Interestingly,
that's a bit like this actually, but dark, not grey.
Because I think I share. I think similar.
And Lucas is the woman with the grey hair that's talking to Bobby. That's who she is.
Similar to Hamish, I'm not a fan of a man bun, but our friend Danny, who is queer. She likes a man bun and the kind of men who wear them. Like, of men, they are the most acceptable men to her. Which is interesting. But she did grow up in a hippie town, so.
Yeah, well, that kind of explains it, innit? Because, like,
yeah,
I have the man bun to let people know I'm vegan, right? That's how it kind of works.
How does anybody know you're vegan? Well, you'll tell them in that way. You know? Yeah, yeah. I use Arch, by the way, you know.
Yeah, he's not actually in it that much. I'm trying to find like a shot of
who?
Unis. Kunis, that's it.
He's in it quite a bit, I thought.
Is it?
He's not in it lots and lots of scenes, but he's in a couple of scenes where he's there for quite a, you know, there's a lot of that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I can get you a picture of him if you want, or you.
I got a picture of the back of his head, but.
Oh, well, that's better than what I've got. I've got the front of his head.
Well, you put the front of his head up. I'll put him
on the screen for the viewer.
Okay. And then.
And then the.
So on the back of his head. That,
his face is rounder than I thought. Now that I see it in detail again,
It's not the man's
it's long, but it's not a pointy oval. It's just kind of slightly oval, rounded. You know.
Yeah, it is quite, and he's got like quite the chiseled jaw, and you know, the good facial hair. It's a good style he's got there. To be fair,
He doesn't really look very military, does he? When I think about it, it's.
No, you wouldn't think a man bun would go in the military. I guess you know
it's hair up, innit? Like if you have long hair in the military,
oh, it's hair up. Yeah. If you're a woman, but I figured if you're a man,
I assume they've moved past the
I find it weird.
Why he's a very handsome man, may I say?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that is a perfect man bun.
Yeah,
I think it's possible as well that there was a bit of a cultural reference in his look as well. It's got a kind of a sort of shogun-y Japanese sort of thing going on.
I think man buns were historically more of a thing in East Asia anyway, right? Yeah. Mm.
Why he could pull it off better.
Yeah. Well, the hair suits them quite well. Like, this is a messy man bun. Because my hair is like, look at this, right? Like,
does that even count as a bun? That's not a bun. It's a bun part, I guess.
There's a bun part to it, yeah.
I would call that a high ponytail.
A high ponytail high side ponytail.
Yeah,
No, because the ponytail doesn't have a bun.
Open up Fallout 3 and see what their haircut is called in Fallout 3, because it definitely
this
exists.
I don't think this is in Fallout 3.
This is totally a Fallout 3 haircut.
Anyway, we all know that Chris is a Klingon now, so.
What he says down, yeah.
I don't even know what happens if I put Fallout 3 haircuts into DuckDuckGo. Mm-hmm. Oh, it does give me them, but it doesn't give me the names. But I don't think... No, there's no top knots or anything like that.
On the that, ladies, that's sure? more of a top knot than a man bun, yeah.
You could call it a top... Yeah, it's a bit of a top knot, maybe.
I meant yours, but yeah.
Yeah. Not really.
Anywho.
I'm sure there are. Are you looking at the ladies' haircuts? Because I'm sure there are the ladies.
I've got some ladies' haircuts. There's a lot of mods there. There's... But, well... that side, I don't know if anyone at home knows what this is, what this interruption is, if you can even see it there.
Bite my tongue then. Make some sort of snarky comment by accident, of course, you know.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, I'll get it done soon at some point, like cut, but
shaved.
No, don't. You'll regret it in the long run.
No, you won't.
It's more hassle to look after, but.
You've got to ask yourself, are you a roundhead or are you a cavalier?
Well, I mean, cavaliers like to party. I don't like to party, actually. Do I?
I'm a mild partier.
Yeah, I used to like to party, but now
I the roundheads had a better aesthetic.
No.
But I like utilitarianism, don't I guess? I lean that way. You lean more foppish.
Yeah, the roundheads look like Oliver Tree. Do you know who Oliver Tree is?
No, let's have a look.
Okay.
I better do this for the sake of the audience as well, then.
I can put an Oliver Tree
That's not the Mormons. That's Joan d'Arc.
What the hell?
No, that's Mormons are like, what's his name out of Crank?
Jason Statham.
Yeah, that he's a roundhead. That's the roundhead aesthetic to me, just like tough lad.
Oh really?
I think yeah.
I thought roundheads.
There's a couple of pictures.
Because it was the shave. The roundhead came from. They shaved their heads and didn't wear wigs.
I thought they were called roundheads because they had haircuts like this.
No,
the helmets.
No. I think it's the shaved heads. As opposed to the wigs. The wigs that the cavalier side would. But yeah, here you go. Is a roundhead man.
Wait a minute, are you saying Prince Charles's hair wasn't real?
that's the roundhead man. It's very utilitarian, very I like it.
I'm showing that to the audience as well.
Hang on a minute. You say you like utilitarian, but what was that what's the thing that you keep talking about? The dressing down of men,
Yeah. No, I think it's an interesting phenomenon. And I think we've gone too boring. I think option for me, I like utilitarian. I'm not going to tell anybody else what to do. You like foppish and like it suits you. I like utilitarian. That suits me. I want you to be foppish and rakish, and for me to be utilitarian
rakish.
And brutish.
Rakish. I don't know if he's a rake. That's quite harsh.
Totally a rake.
No,
rakes,
not.
Is rake bad?
Rakes are wee bit...
I don't. What's rakish?
Rake. Oh God, so many different.
Rake is the sort of slightly roguish.
Oh, it means
right.
No. Yeah. Oh, to collect with a rake.
No. It says here, lewd, debauched.
Yeah.
That's not, okay, maybe I've misunderstood what rakish means. I mean, what do I mean then? More, you're a fancy lad, like an aesthetic fancy lad. Dandy-ish, yeah.
A rake was a man who... habituated to mortal conduct, particularly womanizing.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't find the definition in the good dictionary.
Oh no, this is just DuckDuckGo's and.
Oh no, there's so many more definitions than I thought there were. Holy shit!
Oh, we're learning words.
To walk about,
this is not an educational
or ramble
podcast.
Idly.
That's like a rakish angle sort of use of it, I suppose. Yeah.
Oh, synonyms. Dashing, old-fashioned.
Yeah, there you go, see?
Smart, sporty, flashy.
See, I tend to think of it more as like a wide boy, you know.
A soft brimmed hat which he wore at a rakish angle. A person.
Okay. This is still a verb. To act the rake, to lead a dissolute, debauched life. Yeah, I don't really mean that.
No. Oh, here's one. A rakish person or appearance is stylish in a confident, bold way.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Profligate. Oh, that's a good word.
Profligate's a great word.
That is the word that they use in Fallout New Vegas to describe like the people of you know the strip in Las Vegas. Profligate. They use a degenerate and all these, and I think like they're kind of like alt-righty terms in a way, or ones that alt-righty people see sort of
when they use pejoratively. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because because some of the alt-righty people, they like using those old-timey words because it makes them sound smarter than they are.
Yeah.
Like profligate.
To be fair, I like doing that too.
I do too.
But like, I'm not alt-righty. I do enjoy...
You're not a fascist then?
No.
Not currently.
Okay.
Good to know.
How are you, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
I fucking wish.
No. I was on a panel with a Communist Party guy once. He was very nice, and to be honest, generally everything I said I agreed with.
Well, in the last election, do you see that Communist Party lady? I mean, there's a bunch of communists, but one of the Communist Parties. You see the lady who was on that fascist TV channel with Theresa May and CBeebies? Just sort of tore her apart?
Or the other one?
Not CBeebies. Did you not see her?
No.
British lass who just gave, I think it was Theresa May, she just gave her a dressing down, basically, and it was quite enjoyable. Just from the Communist Party. Which yeah, they had. What's the fascist TV channel that started up?
GB News.
It's on GB News, yeah. And they had a communist on, which they would never do on the BBC, which in itself is interesting, but yeah.
Yeah. Although, does
Yeah, they'll platform anybody right of Hitler all day long, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody left of Thatcher is not going to get a look in.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But isn't GB News not considered a news channel by Ofcom?
Yeah, there's two of them, though, isn't there? There's the other one as well. One of them's slightly more successful than the other. But they're not a real, yeah, they're not, for legal reasons, they're not a news channel. Yeah. One of them, I can't remember.
Do they have a regulator? That's probably why they're not a news channel, if they don't have a regulator.
They're under a different regulator. Yeah, they're under Ofcom instead of whatever the other thing is, which is like press related.
Ipso is
maybe.
Is one. I think there's a few.
I lose track of it all, to be honest. I tend to blank out anything about that kind of thing.
Yeah,
well, I forget they exist, and it always amazes me. It's like mobile phones and social media and stuff. You know, just amazes me and confuses me when people actually mention it as if it's a real thing.
Well, the thing is with Ipso is that whilst they have very little power, there are press regulators that do have more teeth, but Ipso is quite feeble.
Well, the problem is that most of the things that have gone on in the last 40 years or whatever about the press have been actually illegal and they should be prosecuted. It's not like there aren't laws against what most of them have done. We don't need more regulation. We need to, you know, I think Ian Hislop said the same thing. We just need the laws to be enforced.
Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah.
But anywho. Then, you know, I mean, you got, who's the guy that does, is it the Daily, Boris Johnson put someone in charge of the BBC or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
One of his inside. I mean, the thing is,
not in charge of the BBC. It's a weird organization because it's hooked into the government without being directly hooked into the government. So on paper, they can say, no, it's an independent thing. It's But it's not. It can't be because of that.
Your budget, we decide who's in charge of you, but totally independent.
Yeah. Well also, the contract goes up for tender. So, you know, it could be one day the government's like, you know what? We're going to give the contract to YouTube.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fucking interesting. Instead of making YouTube not have any adverts.
Oh, but you couldn't because it's an international thing. It would have to be some. Yeah, I know BBC are international, but they're not. They don't have a specifically.
Yeah, you'd have to jig it about a bit, but like you maybe YouTube would
PeerTube,
have a separate
PeerTube. Would have a you know we could be BBC.
Have a PeerTube and make YouTube collaborate with it. And then you could have publicly, and they could finance the educational programming because some of the educational stuff can be quite useful, and the blind stuff, you know, and all the accessibility stuff they do some of that.
Well, the blind stuff. I'm sure our blind and partially sighted viewer is going to be very happy with you there. That's good. You've thought of them.
Yeah, like I mean,
not in a token way at all.
I mean, they
the blind stuff is fine.
I'm just being a dick. It's all right.
They do like, the deaf stuff too.
You're talking about
the mentally disabled like me. It's fine to say like the head cripples.
That's true. You can say that. You can call me whatever you want, really.
Yeah, that's fine.
No. Oh my god! Right. There's Lucy's favorite film is The Newsies, which is an old Walt Disney film, right? And a few years ago, we watched it, and they used the word "gimp" quite a lot. It's a children's film, mind you, and they used the word "gimp" quite a lot.
The thing is, this is just something. Words are the polite term for a thing, and then just become pejorative over time, and then you have to find a new polite. Were like stupid
or
back
man
in
bun.
The day was really fucking offensive. An idiot, stupid, and idiot were really offensive back in the day. And you know, they come in and come out. And I'm not sure. I mean, it's just a part of it's how language works to an extent.
Because they were like there's a guy who who was on crutches, and they weren't pejoratively using it.
They were
just referring to him as you're talking about the gimp.
Yes, like they gimpy leg, Deadwood. Yeah. Not of the time, obviously. But yeah, I think that like somebody called me a gimp. If somebody called me a head gimp, fine. I don't give a shit.
I mean, is it? It's not even that offensive nowadays, is it?
I think in America, it's something bigger in America. I think they made it. It was a sort of Streisand effect sort of thing. Really, personally, I thought that it was.
I think it very much depends how you say it, what tone you say it in, what you mean by it. Like, this is a thing on the ID politics, liberals, like, intent doesn't matter. Interpersonally, intent very much matters. Of course it does. Yeah. Very important.
It matters like 90%, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the most important thing, you know, from the point of view.
Because that's how we use words. If you know, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah,
if you meant to be mean or did not mean to be mean is really important.
Yes, yeah.
Politically, intent doesn't matter; outcomes matter.
Yeah,
but interpersonally, very different.
Yeah, because it's you're expressing a disdain for someone, you know, and if you're if you don't have that disdain, you know, then there's as you say. Yeah. Words change over time all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like somebody calling you English as a slip of the whatever versus somebody calling you English with the intent of insulting you. Like it's very different.
Yeah.
You're both fucking English.
I mean, you know my complicated. I think to be honest, I don't hate the English as much as Hamish. Because...
I don't hate the English. Whoa.
Are you saying?
Some of my best friends are English.
The people I know, right? There's people I know that are English.
The language is unclear there. Are you saying you hate Hamish more than you hate the English?
No, I don't hate the English as much as Hamish. Oh, I see. I see.
Oh, Hamish, that a minefield.
Well, because I like. Okay, oh my god, I can say something so controversial now. Okay. I think that a lot of Welsh culture and Welsh nationalism is forcibly kept around to for like political them and usenings for reasons of ID politics. Whereas
it always will be. It always will be, right?
As whereas, well, I think with Scotland, they have a much more. That's a lot more organic.
I think regional identities and things like that are just from what I know. I mean, I've not spent loads of time in Wales, but I know quite a lot of Welsh people because I live right next to Wales. So I've worked with lots of Welsh people and everything, and it's they don't seem as different, if that makes any sense. I'm not trying to other you.
Would you say that Welsh is more distinct from what we think of as English culture than is Yorkshire? Is Welsh more distinct from English than Yorkshire is?
Yes, but I don't know, because part of that is artificial. Like, for example, I would be fine if the people that wanted to speak Welsh learned to speak Welsh, but they stopped trying to make it like job requirements and things like that. Like,
yeah.
You know, can we just naturally let the people that want to speak it and the people that don't?
I think the problem with that is because English within the United Kingdom is hegemonic. If you go down that route, Welsh culture will just slowly be erased.
And also the problem is that people learn learn English in school.
We learn Welsh in school.
Do you? All right, we don't learn Gaelic at school.
Like, I get that, but also, like, I kind of feel that, like...
Well, again, though, let me clarify. I'm from the Central Belt. I'm from, like, the most anglicised part of Scotland, probably. I mean, maybe the borders are more, but I don't know. I think
I'm from near the border too, which is why all three of us can have a civil conversation.
It's difficult to say correctly, but like, but for me, it's not about England versus the home country.
Problem isn't England.
It's everybody versus London.
Yeah, the problem is London and the Southeast is the problem with Britain. Yeah, the problem with the UK. Yes. Not necessarily the.
And
people,
when we say London, but... we don't mean Londoners.
Yeah, because actually central London is probably not that bad. Yeah. Especially the more or the less affluent areas and stuff like that. But even some of the supposedly more affluent areas of London seem to be much more or much less right wing, anyway, at least.
Could I just want to caveat something I said earlier. When I say intent matters, that doesn't mean that it's an excuse for causing offence. Like, I meant isn't an excuse.
You still have to take
responsibility.
This is the problem that people who talk about free speech miss, is that, you can say what you want, but you've got to take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
And that's what free speech type people in the modern sense particularly don't get. It's like, no, you can't just say what you want and then go, ha, it's all right, it's free speech. You've got to back up what you're saying.
They have the free speech to come back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't. You know, that's another one that they'll use, that the right wing people will use, is like, well, it's my right, it's free speech. You know, it's like, well, no, that doesn't mean you've said it and that's it. That's correct or more valid than something else or whatever. You know.
Anyway. Also, the thing is as well, we don't have free speech in the UK. That's very much an American thing.
It is, right? Yeah. But, I mean, you can still. It's a liberal concept that we blah 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 blah. But yeah, as a legal right, we don't have anything like that. No.
No fragment of it.
And also, especially when it comes to the king, you know, there's a lot of things involving royalty that
archaic stuff that's still around. That's not. Yeah, that stuff never gets reviewed, even though they'll review all sorts of other stuff.
Mm. Well, we beheaded one King Charles. We can behead another.
Oh, yeah,
worth a go. Hey, if America can get rid of at least one CEO, we can get rid of at least one king.
Yeah, in 21st century. CEO of Britain, president man, CEO of Britain.
Bringing it back to know, scientist like... man, then.
I want to address the hegemony comment that you made, Drew.
Uh huh.
which was like when it's like
it would gradually erase that
I want to think like to the future, right?
Could you change your background back, Chris, please?
It is upsetting.
Okay. Is it upsetting because of how he looks? Or
is it very punchy?
Aesthetically upsetting, yeah. Mm.
Okay, all right. I'll do...
a delicate flower.
Show the ting. So, like, the thing about, like... I don't know how to say this sensitively, but it's like... I think that the future is going to be interesting from a cultural point of view. And I think sometimes you can hang on to the past a little bit too much, especially when
I agree with
like,
that. Yeah.
Especially when the narrative of the past is like very manipulated as it is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I
mean, and look at it, sorry to bring this up, but like if you look at the Holocaust, right, it is fading out of living memory, right? And so like, yeah, you know, there's like when there were people that were alive when the Holocaust was blown open and everything like that, it was like it was a huge shock to the system, and then they told it to their children. But then like through the chain of descendants, it can't be it feels like as it fades out of living memory, Holocaust denial is on the rise.
Yeah.
And
well that's kind of how it works, isn't it? That's, you know, those kind of people are going to take advantage of the fact that the people who were actually there.
Yeah.
You know, and no matter how good our storage media and recording and all that sort of stuff seems to become, people still seem to want to believe what they want to believe. It's,
exactly, yeah. You know? History is like a story that people are fighting to tell it their way.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And there's all kinds of like, you know, patriarchal stuff that comes into this as well.
Massively,
like,
almost all religion is based on a patriarchal.
Colonialism. Colonialism. You know, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of feel like, I don't want to say I'm a bit jaded with history, but it's like...
Oh, I can understand that.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And I think,
I mean, it's politics written down and justified. Exactly.
I think people need to understand off history that it's an interpretive thing. It's not here are the facts. It is an interpretation of...
But it's often thought of as here are the facts, and that's...
It's the same problem with science. People think that science is a set of rules that are laid down and immutable, but the whole point of science and scientific method is that it's always mutable. That's the point. Yeah. It's always science. It's always open to being tested and stuff. And that's why things happen. Like simple analogy of that is a new unearthing of something historical. You know, historical dig site can change the narrative of a people's or an area. There was someone quite recently, actually, I forgot what it is now. But there was one quite recently. They dug up something, and it was like, oh, this has changed their view of, you know, some. You know, not in a like the world shattering way, but you know, that would make a difference to anybody looking at that specific people or subject or time or whatever it was.
Yeah. So like to put like a positive approach to this sort of situation is like I think we should be more interested in creating the new cultures of the future rather than holding on to the old cultures of the past.
I agree with that. Because if you follow the route backwards of like protectionism and traditionalism of, you know, culturally, then we just split further, you know, we split into smaller and smaller and smaller. You were this tribe and I was this tribe, and you know, which is historically not good. I think of us thinking of ourselves as one thing. It's finding the balance between retaining what is still alive and
and that's where the problem comes in with and the difference as well between Welsh nationalism and Scottish nationalism. There are people of all shades of like their reason for being involved, as you know, as Chris was talking about, you know, people doing it for bloody mindedness. There is that in Scotland as well, definitely. You know, just to be anti-English, as you know, is it, you know, there is a component of that, but the problem is if we don't hold on to some of that. Not that part, but if we don't hold on to some of our own identity, then it all becomes London. And it'll never all be London, but then it'll all be treated like London. Well, here's a simple example, actually, of that sort of behaviour systemic... systemic overlaying. I don't know what the right phrase I'm looking for is, but if you like, I've had my own business in this area, and it's a small town, small village. But what happens is we're in the same, we're still in the same council area as Bath, which is a fairly big city, a fairly small city, but a fairly important city, big tourist place, affluent, yeah. Bits of it, anyway. That's the other point. I've lived in Bath and in a shitty bit called Twerton, which is the second worst part of Bath. There's a bit that's even worse, believe it or not. Anyway, so the point is that where I live here is 8 miles away, roughly, from Bath, and is nowhere near as affluent. We don't get the so I'm talking about this from a business owner point of view. When I had the business. Our rates and things and all the stuff that the council wanted us to be involved with or paying for or taking part in was all geared towards Bath. So people try to charge rents and rates for so that the owners of the buildings and the councils and everything try to charge Bath rates for everything. But we don't get that. We get the town that I had my shop in, like the next town over, couldn't sustain a bookshop. But it's got like 10 charity shops and 20 takeaways, and it's basically treated like a commuter town for Bath. You can't do, and it's that sort of enforcement of. I can't think of it. There's a word for it, in fact. I think there's an actual word for it, but I can't, or a two word phrase for it. And I'm trying to think that applies to that. So it's like they're trying to make it that because they're sitting in an office going, "Oh, well, this is, we're all part of this one big thing." And we're as important as Bath out here. And the councillors think that they're.
You mean like gentrification?
No, not quite, because then the town would have other things in it. The touristy money would be spent there as well. And what happens?
So the bad parts of gentrification, but not the good parts. Yeah,
well, there is, as much as there is any good parts to gentrification. Yes, yeah, that's it. There are a couple of chain things there, but they've come in at the expense of some of the things that were there to start with. There was a coffee shop. Now there's probably a cost. I mean, I don't know. I don't town centre and all that, but. Yeah, and there are a couple of specialists. I mean, my shop was specialist, obviously, computer things as specialist. And that didn't actually do too bad. I mean, it was my mental health that stopped that from going on. I mean, it would have fallen apart anyway because Windows is no longer a viable thing for most people. It's too many. It would have been... I would have had to have moved into, supporting Apple and Google... Apple and... Google things and all that sort of
thing. Oh, Google Chrome. Chrome OS.
Well, not necessarily, but like to be viable as a shop, I would have to be repairing phones and tablets and instead of repairing Windows all the time. Anyway.
Chris, you did have... Sorry, you had a point about Germany that I sort of stepped on.
And that's a fair point about London. I suppose to extend that, it could be like, yeah, I mean, being swallowed by London is not a good thing, but being swallowed by Europe is better, and maybe being swallowed as a world people may be better.
Yes, ultimately that would be the perfect thing, as everybody. Yeah. Now, the problem is that it doesn't happen it doesn't happen like a warm embrace from the outside. That's the problem. It starts. More like tentacles reaching out from one central place, and this is why, particularly in Scotland, we have we do not want to be ruled by London. There's a lot of people that just don't see it. And how you said you felt duped and all that. There must be lots of people. Certainly, Brexit was one part of it, and the other part was the campaign for to try and undermine the independence vote, which was it must have mattered to them if you look at the amount of money and effort they put in to pushing no.
America will never stand for an independent Scotland. Like, it will not happen under America's watch or whatever.
Yeah, because they're not going to put the nuclear stuff anywhere else. Because nobody else will take it now. This is the thing. If you try to put it in, say, Liverpool or Newcastle or Portsmouth or something, you would have, you know, the people just wouldn't stand for it. But it's there, and it's, oh well, well, it's just in Scotland. Oh, there's nothing there. But
in terms of being embraced by a Europe or whatever, I agree.
The intent
behind the embrace matters, and like if the intent is to homogenise, as is the case with the EU, I think. To work in a particular way for one particular entity, and everybody else is subservient to that, I think that's a bad thing. If in a more BRICSy way, where everything is allowed to retain its identity and interests, and we work together for the common good, very much so.
A co-op rather than a takeover. This is the thing: is I think Scotland, independent Scotland as a European EU nation would have been butchered. And that was another thing: is after the EU vote came after the independence vote. And that is quite telling in terms of, you know, how it was all organised as well, you know.
As was the
order in which the last big vote we had on electoral reform. Again, it wasn't. There was no. Oh, it's better or worse. It's whatever. It was scary stories. It was. Oh, it'll cost money. It's confusing. You're too thick to have this. Basically, was what they tried to say. That was the thing. And it worked.
Yeah. And I hate that it worked. But I was.
This is why I don't understand why people are believing that the SNP are somehow doing damage to Scotland that wouldn't happen worse as it has already done under, because already in the newspapers you'll see that the SNP have mismanaged this. The SNP, you know, it's in all the headlines in the newspapers of the Scottish editions, and the SNP did a really, you know, they're not perfect. It's not a socialist utopia by any means, but it's a hell of a lot better than in lots of parts of England and Wales. For various reasons, they make it into a thing about the SNP rather than Scotland, Scottish autonomy, and they're trying to take away more and more power from the devolved parliament at the moment. And this is the Labour Party doing that, supposedly the party of the people, as you know.
Yeah, and I suppose by
this
no,
is, sorry,
by,
this is really taking
this
it
is
off
very
track.
Politic. But, like, I mean, at the very least with the SNP, they're not dictated by London. Like, that's...
Go on.
One of the things I like about the internet is that how it has allowed, to some real degrees, some sort of anarchic cultural side of things. Like with memes, it's like, I think, you know, memes are like a really profound art form. I know that sounds silly.
It's global, graffiti expanded, isn't it?
That Spanish guy, or whatever, looking really sad with his arms behind his back, waiting wistfully for something. It's like that. I've seen that meme in like dozens of languages. It's great. I don't know if he's Spanish. He's got the Spanish moustache.
Oh my goodness! Is his name Manuel?
That's okay. That's okay.
Is he from Barcelona?
Spanish moustache is okay.
Right. So we are talking about the Expanse, though.
Okay. Yes. All right. Anyway,
it's interesting that almost all of this applies to the politics of the Expanse, but not in this fucking episode.
Although
working together is quite interesting, because Alex and Amos have a little chat about that, you know, peace in our time, and all it took was for everybody to be about to die.
Well, I mean, isn't that not massively dissimilar to like World War II, when there were like big internationalist efforts to bring people together in the wake of it, because we know that working together
without it, I can go like that. But I mean, it's not worked for climate change, because billionaires are still making
billionaires. I mean, we've got to preface all of this by saying,
Drew puts it better all the time. There's a difference between two different types of capitalism, isn't it? Global capitalism.
Bourgeois versus global. There's a war within capitalism between bourgeois capitalism and global capitalism. Farage and Trump represent bourgeois capitalism, which is like people who own factories and stuff, like, you know, localized capital, versus international financial capital, which is localized capital.
Although... because Trump has the backing of a lot of like crypto tech bro billionaires. Is that like, are we starting to see a consolidation of that sort of?
Not really, because they're
I think that's more. I think
they're grifters. They're the grifter side still. You know, they're like
fundamentally the reason the Republican Party fell behind Trump is because global capitalists would rather have a bourgeois capitalist than somebody who's not capitalist. You know, that's still better for them than the alternative. So they'll bide their time.
American president hasn't been capitalist though?
Well, no, they're all. I mean, they're all. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was thinking. You know, the closest is Bernie.
Yeah, pushing things away from the option of it. Yeah,
and they'd still rather have an out and out. I mean, it's complicated. Yeah, go on, Chris.
But is how like? I mean, this is clear as day when you talk about how, Bernie, how they would rather have won with Trump than lost to Trump than won with Bernie.
That's
what they did here with
I think part of that, and this can be overstated, but part of that is the Democratic not the politicians themselves, but the Democratic infrastructure, the party infrastructure, which is a lot of consultants, a lot of PR people, researchers, pollsters. They do well whether they win or lose. They kind of do better when they lose because they get more funding, because they can, every time Trump does something stupid, they can send out a mail shot, get a ton more donations. So it's almost in their interest to lose rather than win. So they at least don't particularly care whether they win or lose.
I can't help at this point to start thinking along the lines of Chomsky's manufactured consent, where it's like the Democrats are kind of like they're pacifying people basically left of center at this point. It's not even pacifying the communists and the socialists. It's pacifying anyone who's even vaguely remotely social democrat, it seems, at this point. And it's like they're tactical losers. They're there to make people think that they're in a democracy, but then they keep saying, oh, we're the only ones that can stop Trump, and Trump's beaten them 2-1, you know? Like,
and they also keep saying, Trump is a fascist. And the problem with that is if fascism doesn't come about, then they look like liars, and it's Boy Who Cried Wolf. And if what Trump is fascism, then the response is, well, seems okay. Fascism is all right then.
Yeah, they're handing their position in their transition in the government over. In fact, there are Congress people who are actually trying to reach across the aisle to the fucking Trumpians at this point. Like, I see part of me, if I'm giving people the benefit of the doubt, are kind of thinking,
don't do it.
Progressives on the left are so lost at this point because they've had loss after loss after loss, and any wins that they've had have been taken away from them. Like, I think we can expect some weird behavior from progressives at this point.
The most frustrating thing about the Democrats in America is they won't fucking try. They could have tried with Bernie. Give it a shot. But the problem is they're more afraid of social democracy. When they stop lying for the media, they're more afraid of Bernie than they are of Trump. The Democrats are more afraid of Bernie than they are of Trump, and that's the problem. Mm.
And you listen to Republican voters about this, and you tell them why
that's why they killed Kennedy, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But when you listen to like Republican working class voters, a lot of them will tell you that they'll never vote Democrat because Democrats are a party of liars, and they do.
and they are, but that's an irony, you know.
And it's like, at least. And to them,
the wolf that ate my grandmother did say that he was going to eat grandmothers.
This was us trying to talk about The Expanse.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Sorry. Yeah.
And I need a cup of tea. It's
okay. Yeah. Well, I'll do a little recap that won't be anything you've not got. So, scientist man has the idea. Not a very clever one. I think this is another reason I don't like him. This is not a great idea. I thought it was a bit wild,
yeah.
Everybody around him, I know what he was going for in a scientific point, and he got it, but he really wasn't thinking about the consequences let's cause a nuclear explosion somewhere near the station so we can measure some stuff.
And after the
last thing that happened is like a third of the people on the ships inside the ring space were killed, and a third were injured. Another third were injured. So,
And that was just a Martian throwing a grenade.
Yeah, and he says that as well. He even says, a Martian threw a grenade and it defended itself. Yeah. But he's like, no, no, I've been measuring the energy of this and energy of that, and I want to measure what happens if we... Why does it have to... Yeah, yeah. It's just... Yeah, it's along the same lines as the Eros thing. Why do that... You know, do your evil experiments, but why release it on a whole fucking, you know, whole population like that? It's a bit mad sciencey, and I think that's why I don't like him. I put him in the same category as the mad sciencey people from Protogen. Really, is like that's reckless. It's, I mean, I'm pretty sure Drew, given his attitude towards the Manhattan Project scientists, might have some sympathy with my argument here, that it's more reckless than it is helpful. But he manages to persuade, more importantly than anything, I think, he manages to persuade Ashford. And Ashford is the de facto...
Boss at the moment.
Boss, yeah. He's. I mean, there's three bosses. There's one for each faction. Yeah.
Although Kunis seems to be against the idea.
Yeah, exactly. But for some reason... Yeah, so Kunis is against the idea, and he's from the Earth lot.
Mm.
I can't remember what the Martian lady says at all. If she, do they even ask her? That's worrying. Do they even ask her? I'm sure they must do. I'm just not remembering the exact time.
I'm assuming so, but she is a black woman, so they might not.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Oh, she's an older black woman. She's got grey hair and stuff.
An older
black woman. Why would we ask her anything, you know? Yeah, don't clip that out of context. I'm going to say almost everything in this show could be taken out of context, couldn't it, Drew? You know,
yeah.
The Holocaust aside.
Actually, to be fair, if we ever get cancelled for something, we'll just say, we can just point to, all right, watch the entire of Space Mergers.
Yeah, you have to watch all of it and find out, yeah.
Yeah, you have to find the bit.
Yeah. So he does it anyway, somehow overruling...
Sorry, Drew, what are you eating?
Yeah, what are you eating, Drew? Chips.
My sister made me a lovely steak and chips, fries, steak fries, or ghosty. I think it's something like that.
Chunky fries?
I've eaten all the steak, so I'm dipping the chips in the blood. Sorry, I realise you're a vegan. I apologise for that graphic.
Yeah, but I think tomato sauce, to be honest. tomato blood. So anyway, so then he does it. So they blow up the engines of a small probe or ship or whatever it is, and he gets his measurements and he's overjoyed, but you know, as Holden, I mean, I don't think it needed Holden's super duper deep revelations to realise that this was a fucking bad idea.
Ashford
afterwards says, well, now they've taken the entire human race to be a threat, you know, but he doesn't seem as pissed off as he should be either, you know.
This is kind of an arc for Ashford that we're... I still love Ashford, but this is an arc that we're on with Ashford, which is an interesting arc during this last episode. But yeah, no, it amazed me how quickly everybody agrees to that in this dangerous place that's like reacted dangerously. Let's do something. Let's do something even worse than what we've done
that's
before
what we're
to
saying.
Provoke it and see what happens.
Given, you know, what I was just saying when you were here was that the short version is that it's, you know, like the Manhattan Project. He wanted the data, but he didn't, you know, he didn't think about letting a bomb off somewhere would be a bad idea.
But that in itself, that's kind of what scientists are supposed to do. That's fine. But the people in leadership were all just like, fuck it,
well,
give it a go.
Though, this is what we were saying, that Curtis didn't agree. So how did he get me?
But he exceeded. He didn't, you know. Black lady and Asian dude, like they didn't, you know, object stridently.
Yeah, no, he did. You know, Kunis did. He
Kunis
stepped
did
in the
bit,
way.
Yeah.
Really? It's like, but the thing is, he is outranked basically.
Right.
Not a ship.
Right. Yeah.
And also
him being
a captain. I think he was a captain Kunis, wasn't it? Like he's going to have respect for the captain's rank.
Commander.
I think there might also have been a bit. There might have been a bit of like, it's the Belters. If they want to do it, they're going to do it. We can't stop them.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't the Belters. What Belters wanted to do it?
No, it was Ashford. It was Ashford arguing for it. I think in the leadership, it was Ashford who was behind.
Okay, but it was the science man.
It was the scientist.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's science man that's he wanted his data, and it was.
But yeah, they've woken up the ball.
Well, this is it. I mean, it was already... Yeah. Okay.
Very annoyed about this.
It's a bit.
Well, do you know
what? It just
doesn't
seem to make as much sense as most things do in The Expanse.
I agree with you on that. I agree with that.
It's an odd thing. What they get out of it sets up perfectly for the two sides that are emerging. You know, the let's do this thing and let's, you know, so Holden's of a, you know, communicate with, you know, he's trying to get Miller back and work out what's going on and try and communicate with the whatever's in charge of the
His position would be essentially it's not trying to hurt us, it just doesn't realize we're here, basically. Yeah. Something, yeah.
And now they've, but that's what, and that's the point. Now they know that they're.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? I felt the exact same way about the end of this episode, where it's like, okay, let's fire a top high beam.
Well, this is it. That's the two factions still. Yeah. One faction lets off a nuclear, or makes a nuclear explosion to piss them off, to piss off the whatever entity is in control of the station, and then thinks, right, okay, let's cut off their connection to the ring. By destroying the ring itself, to protect them.
It's very, it's poking the bear. It's curiosity killed the cat. It's what we are. We are human. You know, we
put in some ways, in some ways it is, but at the same time, I mean,
it is a weird step.
It was a weird step between getting the data and then coming up with the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, I feel like they could have got the data by, I mean, it wouldn't have been as cool. It wouldn't have been as, you know, it would have just been a bit of exposition. Oh, I've been studying what happened when we did that. Well, that's what it stems from as well, isn't it? He studies what happens when they try to send a message out through the ring using the laser. But as you say, you're actually correct to say that Ashford is keen by then to turn the communications laser into a weapon. Because his other weapons weren't working because his ship wasn't rigged up for them. But hey, I can fire a laser.
Well, I think without getting too spoiled, I think this is the start of this is Ashford wants to go down in a blaze of glory. Is that too spoilery? Like,
I don't think that's spoilery. I think he almost expresses that.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good.
Yeah. Ashford's down. Whereas Kamina.
Let's go down in a blaze of glory.
At least listens, you know.
From our point of view, let's go down in a blaze of glory in a situation where, hang on, there might be other options.
Yeah, there may still be other options. Yeah.
But hang on a minute.
Yeah, it's yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, the point is that you know, nuclear explosion aside, they've got to the point where, you know, the two sides, the two ideas have become clear, you know, competitors, if you will. You know, Holden wants to communicate and fix everything, and Ashford and, you know, the other people are basically going, right, well, let's you know, do the military solution, or as we see it.
Yeah. It's... I'm a bit disappointed that Ashford sort of went along with it.
Like I say, the thing about Ashford is, like, he's not the same character entirely. I mean, this is a much more sympathetic character than the book's version of Ashford.
I will say Ashford's motivations will make sense in the next episode. It becomes more clear why he's so keen on this path.
Yeah, okay. I think that not so much. I'm not sure the episode answers it completely, but it does build. I mean, every episode we've seen since Ashford came on is built on, wait a minute, where us sort of going as an audience, where's Ashford at? How loyal is he to Drummer? How loyal is he to the OPA? Even, I mean, to, you know, because he is a pirate after all. But Naomi describes him as one of Anderson Dawes's people.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Scavenger.
That comes back to there's a sort of old west analog. There's an old west analog there of people in frontier areas having bandits who are actually under the control of either another town or, you know, suppose, you know, like a shadow force of a government or whatever who wants to influence how a town or territory develops. You know, I think there's a lot of hint of that, I think, in it. Dawes uses the pirate, you know, the pirates and the OPA are not entirely disconnected from each other, shall we say. Let's put it that way.
Well, no, I figured they were pretty... You know,
but
like a lot
of they don't, you know, but they're not all the belt. This is the other thing about it. You know, these are not all the belt. Mm.
Yeah, but it's like a lot of like governments will have like a criminal wing, won't they? As it were,
yeah, privateers.
Privateers. You know, Russians are quite well known for it, but I think there's a Well, so I think
the interesting point here is the most interesting character to look at with all this in mind is Diogo. Mm. Because his uncle was a genuinely hardworking, just trying to get by sort of person who was, you know, shat upon by the Martians at every turn.
Mm.
And they radicalized Diogo by causing his uncle to break and turn against, you know, to turn on them. Mm. And I think that was, you know, Diogo's become... Diogo's journey is excellent, really. It really is. He's an amazing character. It's so much happens to him and around him that you can see exactly how it shapes him. And, you know, I'm also not sure if there's an implication that Diogo is involved with stealing the medical supplies and setting up a black market or not. I'm not sure. That's not a, you know, knowledge thing. I wonder if that's where we're at. But he's meant to be in charge of security, and that's what Ashford's point is of, you know, dragging him off and going, right, you little shit, why is this happening? Or why am I hearing about it from somebody else? You're meant to be in charge of security, you know? Anyway,
but
at least it was a tangent within the Expanse.
Yeah. No, I think because he's got a criminal background, then obviously that's the thing. But I think he's just like a teenager that likes being in charge. I don't know. It seems it does seem kind of ambiguous, doesn't it?
I don't think he's stealing the medical stuff because I think Diogo 100% commits to whatever he sees as his cause.
I suppose you're probably right there. But it's happening, and he's not. Yeah, he's committed to the cause, but not. And he wants to be seen to be the big man, but he's not as he's not as organized or meticulous as he should be. And
he's experience.
So probably people that position, who he thinks is in charge of are running rings around him in the background somewhere. You know.
Yeah, but well, let's hope he gets his fucking ass in gear.
Well, yeah. Is that likely? He's a young person. Anyway, so
he's not going to be young forever, right?
Well, you know, James Dean. Anyway, so we've got this two ways of dealing with things brewing now. But you know, Ashford also, you know, as well as everything else, they just say. And although this might just be a justification, but he does say that's not a bad reason to die either, is to save the human race sort of thing. Even if they'll never know it, you know. I don't know. Yeah, even with teleological knowledge, as is our word of the year.
Oh, hang on, it's 2020. Wait, Cap.
It's 2025 now, yeah.
Yeah.
God. Anyway.
Captain, it's Wednesday.
I think pinning down Ashford is difficult for a lot of reasons. I think we're definitely seeing. I've repeated myself, sorry, but the important point is that we're getting here is there's two sets of people here. He might not have purposefully had a mutiny. But he still got. I don't think Drummer was wrong to say that he got what he wanted, either. Mm. You know.
But Drummer will be back.
For now.
Oh shush. Yeah.
Well, just next episode you'll see what we mean. Anyway, so So Drummer, yeah, let's get back to Drummer, actually. So she has a chat with Naomi and everything, and Naomi helps her to build her mech legs. They're really, I think they've really got a brilliant combination of utility and function. A bit of the belter knocked together in my shedness, and also a sort of weird homage aesthetic to various other mechy things as well. It's like there's a lot going on there with those, just her posture with them, the sort of silhouette of it with the with the legs. I mean, there's loads going on there that my brain's like, I can't quite pick out one thing, but there's there's lots of different things going on there. And it's like that, you know, that's trooper guy, the OPA trooper guy, goes, "It's good to see you back on your feet." You know, it sort of hesitates a bit, you know.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. No, it's not actually very interesting, but do you realise, I didn't realise it this until I saw it again, probably the third or fourth time. Do you realise where they've locked them up? Given, well, you know, where they've locked up Clarissa and Holden?
Farming?
It's horse boxes.
The farms! Yeah, the horse
boxes. It's not, there's not a brig. It's not a ship designed for that. It's designed to be farming. It's horse boxes. Because, you know, you see the door and you look at it and you think, that's a really weird thing. But, yeah. So that's what they've used as a brig, is horse boxes, whatever they call them. Stable.
Yeah, stables, that's it, yeah.
No, what do they call the like, paddock, or is it a paddock? No, a paddock's the walkie aroundy bit, isn't it?
It'd be a stable, yeah.
It'd be a stable.
Yeah, but it's where the horse, sleeps. Yeah, but each individual
stall.
Thing is
stall.
A...
Stall.
Stall, that's
stall.
Yeah.
That's
stalls in
yeah.
a stable, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it just, while we're there, when Holden is locked up, and he's locked up, you know, next to or near to Peaches.
Yep.
And he sees her and he says... Oh, hi, I'm Jim.
I'm
what are
Jim.
You in for?
Yeah, what
are
you in for? Yeah.
Her face is like, fuck me.
She just laughs at her. Yeah, there is a lot of weird coincidence
I would
every
like
time
to,
they end up
if
together.
We if we don't have another particular thread at the moment, I'd like to talk about Amos and Priest.
Go for
it. Oh, yeah, Amos and
Minister. Oh, no, what is she not? She's not even a... No, I mean, she is a minister, but what does... Pastor,
well, Alex,
that's
correct,
the Alex
corrects
it, yeah,
it
to pastor,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is a Catholic thing.
A priest would be a Catholic thing, yeah.
Priest is a Catholic thing, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Also, I wonder if that's something to do with the Martians and their, if they've got some sort of religion or... I mean, religion doesn't... We were talking about this before when we were talking about the Mormons and stuff, but religion seems to be quite heavily still in humanity's everyday
but
stuff.
But not a central feature of the universe, just it's there.
Yeah, but they do send a lot of spiritual leaders, or whatever you want to call them, on the mission as well. On the you know, scientists, yeah. And scientists, philosophers, religious figures and all that, that's what they send out. You know, so it's an odd mix, but an understandable one. Sorry, you wanted to say something, Drew, and I've stepped on it.
Well, I think Chris had something to say about Amos Priest.
I'm seeing an inverse of the Prax and Amos brotherhood a little bit.
How where, inverse in what way?
And who's an I can see.
I don't know if an inverse is the right. Okay, it's like.
It's a different dynamic between them, a different relationship.
Different. Okay, yeah,
but
yeah.
It's still Amos learning things and Amos picking things up for himself. And
but then does Anna learn from Amos a little bit? I'm feeling that Anna.
Yeah,
is
yeah. I think
from Amos.
I'm just doing what needs to be done, and Amos says, "That's same as me. That's what I've always done." I think she's definitely taking things from Amos. I'm you know, she's not showing any sort of distaste or disgust for Amos, which is what a lot of people do when they find out what he is and how he
is. This is all part of Amos's sort of journey to self-determination or whatever.
Self-realization
as a person. He's had a series of teachers, and they've all because Amos, in his own mind, lacks a moral system. So, you know, he's had a relationship with Naomi's relationship with Holden, Prax, of course, and then Priest now, who is kind of similar to Prax in some ways, but different. So he's had all these different teachers.
Yeah, it's another gentle. I think that's what Chris says. Another gentle person with a more pacifist point of view.
But all different takes on morality, and he's learning from all of them. And I think one of the important things he's learning is there's not just one way to be a moral person. There are different ways to be. I've got to find what is a moral person to me.
But the thing is, Anna seems to be colder.
Yeah,
like she seems a bit like she's trying to work out why she doesn't seem to care about Clarissa, and that's kind of interesting. I like her when she's flawed.
She's more likable, but she's also a bit. Well, as you say, colder. She's a bit. She seems to sort of have a cycle of going through being like really sure of herself, really lost, really sure of herself, really lost. I mean, it reminds me of certain people, but you know that people can be like that sometimes. But you'd think, well, and maybe I'm just not very human attuned either. But I think got to her age with her relationship in real life and her position and everything, that she'd have some core of stability, and she doesn't seem to have that. She seems to be wavering a lot. But then maybe she thought she had that, or did appear to have that outwardly until the
She almost says at one point, like, I'm trying to be what I think is a good person, whereas I think Prax had a more sort of instinctive understanding of what it is to be a good person. I think it was that sort of what you were getting at, Chris.
Exactly, yeah. And Anna's sort of idea of it has sort of been turned upside down a little bit. Because I don't feel like... Who was the woman that was killed? The socialite lady?
Tilly,
that's it. Her and Anna weren't like especially close, right?
No,
but they had, you know, they were getting on. She was quite honest with Tilly when Tilly badgered her a little bit. She was just, you know, more honest about her intentions and her desires. Tilly was kind of like, I wouldn't say hedonistic, but adjacent to that in some way. There's a better word for it. You know, she was looking for herself, if you like.
Thrill seeking.
I think I mean, she says it in the show, and I think it's clear the thing that really jarred her most about Clarissa and Tilly's interaction was the fact that she just left her and didn't really care one way or another. In fact, she also voices this when she's talking about Alex and Amos, saying, like, I don't give a shit about you. You know, you just happen to be, you're just collateral damage, you just happen to be there. It's Holden I'm after. And I think we can see that Amos has taken an interest in that as well. Although, from a point of view of, yeah, you're not going to get through to her, we're going to have to deal with her. That's interesting as well. Again, Amos has learned something that I don't think he would have done. He shows more restraint in that he actually says it rather than just goes and shoots her.
Yeah.
Which is something that's changed. He's learned that because, I mean, there's people he has just shot in the past, you know. But there was no immediate physical danger, so I suppose he would take his time more there. But there's the thing where he's like, I'll put her down or whatever. And Anna's like, no, don't do that. And then he, rather than going, well, what the hell are you going to do with her, or arguing about it, he then says, okay, well, I'll kill her a more humane way then. You know, that's when he goes to next. And I think that's interesting. I think that's something about Amos that's... We say the characters don't change, the situations change around them, but I think that one is a sign of Amos learning,
Amos is definitely an exception to that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not just making a decision and that's it. He's now considering the decisions. Not like, oh, what's the impact of this or whatever. It's like once he gets an argument from someone, he again goes, right, why are they arguing? And he takes it as a thing of non-cruelty, you know? It's like, right, no, okay, we can do this. She'll just drift off instead. But Anna's like, no, it's not about her. It's about us. It's about Anna wants her to go back to Earth or wherever they're from and get a trial and be put in prison, basically. That's what Anna wants. She wants her to be... She doesn't want her to get an easy out, which is an interesting point of view from a religious person who, you know, surely by definition must believe in the afterlife and all that bollocks. So she must think, surely she would think, well, that's fine, she'll get, you know, she'll get judged by the, you know, God or whatever, and that'll be...
I don't know if we know what religion looks like in the future like this. I mean, it could be the case that it's understood or accepted that God's non-interventionist or that there isn't an afterlife, but religion still remains or something like that.
Well, the whole you know, judged at the pearly gate stuff, that's more sort of like Christian folklore than Christian theology.
There's
not really anything of that in,
Yeah, well, it's just an idea. I mean, also, that's a justification for people, you know, going and slaughtering thousands of people in, who aren't us. Mm. Whatever us happens to be at the time, you know, all over the world. But yeah, so I think that, you know, okay, maybe I'm being very cynical there then, instead of just my normal level of cynicism. But yeah, so I think the point is that Anna wants her to go back and face up for what she's done. Because she does seem quite resilient. She's a bit scared when she gets the gun pointed at her, but her reaction to almost everything has been to just automatically switch on her, what's it called, endocrine boost system or whatever it was called, you know, her superpowers, and then become violent, you know.
Pardon? Oh, yeah,
augmentations,
So Clarissa's like morality is actually kind of strange to me. She doesn't care about Amos, but
she cares about what her dad thinks, though.
I mean, that's I think that's
like super duper daddy issue situation there, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And also, it's like, does she seems to be very ill informed, because it's like, if you want to go after Holden, surely Amos and Naomi are like pretty good. You know, you want them as well, right? Ideally.
Yeah, in a way, but don't, you know, you think about how many billionaires really know what's, you know, she's from like the richest family and the, you know, how would she, how much attention is she going to pay to the details?
Well, I guess, but the documentary crew, well, I don't know.
Yeah, but would she pay attention to that? I suppose
if she's learning how to do the mechanics to get onto a ship, that's quite dedicated, isn't it?
You would think, she's done enough. She's done enough research to presumably she got the engineering training in order to you know, accomplish what she's trying to accomplish. Yeah. You would think she would do, if she's doing that much sort of prep. You would think, I think Chris.
Maybe
right.
She would know she more would, about Amos would, and Alex and Naomi. Then
know that they're important, because if she, you know, she killed Amos and Naomi, that would hurt Holden. But I guess maybe she's just more sort of single-minded than that. She just has to kill Holden. That's her, not really kill. It's discredit, isn't it?
Yeah. She wants to. No, I think she wants both. I think she wants to make him look like the bad guy completely, then get rid of him. You know, it's a very well. I mean, if we're going to talk about inferences, Melville, obviously, we're talking Moby Dick here, aren't we? Which might be a better way of looking at her attitude to the crew of the crew of the Rocinante is like, doesn't matter, he's the prize, you know.
How are you seeing Melba at this point, Chris?
Do you mean Clarissa?
Melba called Clarissa Mo.
I gotta be honest. I think I still stand by my the flashback statement is that I would have got this character without the flashback.
And more, what's your emotional reaction to her currently?
A little bit of confusion, really, because it's like, it's a little bit like Anna, actually, to be honest. I think
they're both confused at this point.
Anna's definitely confused, but she knows she's confused.
Yeah.
Whereas she is, Whereas with Clarissa, it's like it's a bit like, well, you know, lots of people have shitty parents. It doesn't mean you go around killing people or
that's
like,
what Anna says to her, right?
Yeah, yeah, like that's it. And it's like, and it, I get, I just, yeah, like, I don't know. And I don't even necessarily find it that interesting as of yet.
Mm.
Maybe I'll turn around on it because you guys seem to have stronger opinions on Clarissa than I do.
Well, maybe Drew certainly has. Drew's got a thing for sure.
Less Hamish, I think.
It's
teleological, it's spoilery because, you know, it hints at what's coming. But yeah, for me, it's, I mean, the show does it a lot though. It shows you characters in their worst light and you're like, oh, they're a cunt. And then you get to know them a bit better. And it never sort of like, because Avicerella torturing that dude at the beginning, that's still evil to me. That is never justified.
Oh, and she, you know, and she basically causes your least favorite character's death.
Well, kind of.
You know.
But I come to love Avicerella and, you know, Amos. You've been on that journey now with Amos, like psychopath as far as you can, you know, in the everyday sense. At the beginning, like horrible, evil, violent, fuels everything with violence. No, you know, and you come to know him over time, and you love him not because of it or despite it. Like it doesn't justify it, but you love him. You get to know the full character.
Yeah, full person.
Clarissa is another one of those. You've not seen it yet, of course, and Clarissa is another one of those. I think less so Hamish, but for me, Clarissa is another one of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit like I'm willing to get that I don't understand the character, maybe, but I also don't seem to care to understand the character.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say it about a lot of people.
I think at the point,
we're picking your favourites out of it in a way, you know, one's favourites.
And what's your? Yeah. So we're towards the end of season three now. So again, going through it for the first time, like, how do you feel about, like, you know, the sort of the broader arcs and like at this point? Like, are you still enjoy is season three as enjoyable as the previous ones or and that kind of thing?
Yeah, every bit is enjoyable, to be honest. It's I'm waiting for it to drop off like you said it would, to be honest.
I like season four.
What I like about it is that, like you say, it's not afraid to up the ante a little bit. This is why I kind of think the time travel's kind of in the midst of it, because it's like, what can you do? Like, I thought this was going to be too, dare I say it, grounded for aliens, and then they bring in aliens, but it works.
And then
they bring in the ring thing, and I think, okay, this is starting to look a bit more like Stargate or something, but it works. So I'm kind of curious to see, like, Where are they going to drop the ball? Like,
they never really drop the ball. To me, it's the kind of stories they're telling get a little bit more interesting, less interesting to me. It doesn't fall off a cliff or anything like that.
Okay, but also it's like I'm looking forward to seeing how far they push the envelope. I know that sounds like a fucking deleted interview from a box set answer, but like.
No, you're right, because in this show, they usually, when that's said, they do something stupid and it doesn't work. But in this show, like you say, they do stupid things and make it somehow fit.
I think that's why the nuclear explosion thing jars so much.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. Yeah,
it's because it doesn't quite. There is a point to it. You know, I'm sure if I analysed it enough, I'd find like there's maybe three things that they always do with each big thing or whatever, and they've dropped one of them off by accident, and they've only got the two of the three or whatever. It's something like that.
To me, it just feels like they didn't have enough time in the episode to narratively justify.
Well, that's the other thing is you've got to remember as well that this is like half a series to fit in a whole book to get them, and I don't know if that was a deliberate thing to get them onto a book per series or something. And I'm not sure what the TV company side of it
that
is.
That seems likely. Yeah.
So I'll see how that, you know, we'll see how that matters in terms of pacing. I do like the faster pacing though, but
I think you're right. It does help the pacing a bit, but it also it causes little bits of discomfort like that as well.
When you say you like the faster pacing, do you mean just straight up you prefer a show that is paced a bit quicker, or is it in contrast to the slower stuff, or you like it mixing it up, or you prefer it all to be like this?
It's more base than that. Like, it's more like I just like lots of things happening.
You like the action.
I like the payoff. Yeah. Mm. Like, in reality, maybe they could have slowed it down and it would have been just as good, maybe better or whatever. But I can't deny that I'm liking the fact that every episode has some fucking bombshells in them.
No, the reason I asked is because I think first time through I felt the same. Like, I was like, oh, like things are happening more quickly. But on a rewatch, I think Hamish will agree. Like, you really appreciate the build-up episodes.
Mm. Yeah, you do.
Because you know what's coming, so the build-up is more meaningful then.
Yeah. And like we say, there's things that have happened back at the start of Series 1 that will still come up. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things in particular I'm just thinking that don't really pay off until the sixth series, which is the last series, that come up, and it's just whether they had whether they were like writing it with that much thought ahead, or whether it was just
it feels like
they're building concepts of things within the universe of their story, and then they decide, oh yeah, here's one that we can use in the fourth book or the fifth book or whatever, we can do this, you know.
And we are basically at the halfway point now.
Yeah, we're at the halfway point at the end of the next one, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, we are. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. It feels further along in some ways because so much has happened.
Yeah, that's it, though. Yeah, but this is it. This is the interesting thing about what we're saying about the pacing is, but a lot has happened, even though it seemed a bit slow in places, so much still happens.
I don't know if there's like a magic formula, but I like the, so far as a first time viewer, I like the mix. Like it feels like a bit fast, a bit slow, a bit fast, a bit slow.
Like
no real rhyme or reason to it, but it keeps you on your toes. Maybe it makes it feel like real life in a way, where you know how like with real life, you get like a boring bit, and then you get like a fucking crazy ass shit, and then a boring bit. You know,
and when you're in the boring bit, you really want the crazy bit. And when you're in the crazy bit, you really want the boring bit.
It it feels more organic when it does stuff like that, you know. And this show is very good at making things seem organic, because this episode, I'm guessing, takes place over a couple of weeks. Because quite
that makes sense.
A lot,
I can see that. Yeah.
I'm guessing I get the feeling, because it takes time for ships to come in.
Yeah, because it just switches from the offer being put out to all the ships getting there, and we know that they can't get there at super high speed because of the thing. But they are all being drawn towards the orbit of the station as well. I wonder how much difference that makes. I mean, obviously it seems to be an absolute speed limit rather than a relative speed limit.
Well, everything is isn't it all equidistant or something like that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They're getting pulled together anyway. So, but as you say, there's
kind of another good line when Amos gets on the behemoth and they take his weapons off him, and then he says, "I'm going to need that gun back at one point." That made me laugh.
Yeah,
that really funny. Did. That was like, it's like, give me that back. I need to shoot you.
Yes, exactly. Give him one gun back. I'm going to shoot you. I think that's a Diogo interaction that will never endear him to the people he's talking to. That and Bobby, you know, he pisses Bobby off as well, doesn't he? Nice armor. I'm taking all your stuff. Sort of line, you know. It's just very.
And you know he's going to play with it.
Petulant and childish. Yes, exactly.
Do you think the Martian outfit has like some self-defense mechanisms against people like Diogo?
Well, their armor is all individualized, isn't it? So
is he going to push the button that makes it separate and just go and knock himself out?
That would be great.
Yeah, it's good. It would push the button it does to him what the station did to that other guy. You know?
I like
people messing with James Bond's gadgets or something.
Yeah. Is it like an Austin Powers thing where it's a click or like a click pen? It's like, oh, what's this? A pen?
I do know what I've never seen Austin Powers.
You probably won't like it.
I think I would, but I think the
character's kind of irritating, but he's meant to be irritating. I think I've just got to get over that because I think I probably would enjoy it because I like Mike Myers stuff.
Yeah, I generally like Mike Myers. Did you like, what was it called? Is it something like My Girlfriend's an Axe Murderer or something, or Help I Married an Axe Murderer?
Yeah, not, something like that. Saw it once at the time, but yes, enjoyed it.
Yeah. I thought it was good. People seem to slag that one.
The third Austin Powers film, Gold Member, is definitely a drop off from the trilogy. Like, they do two reasonable films, in my opinion. They're okay. They're nothing. You're like, I don't.
Yeah, there's a couple of bits. Yeah. It's got a hint of a. It's got a mixture of things in it, including the sort of Zucker Abrams type feel.
Do you know what I'm
talking about with that, Drew? Airplane and Naked Gun. But they don't quite pull it off as good.
They don't nail it as Airplane and Top Secret.
Yeah, Top Secret's excellent film.
I've seen Top Secret.
Say nothing more about it. Watch it. It's brilliant.
Okay. I think you're right.
One of Kilmer's finest.
There are a few Austin Powers moments like that. You know, I don't know if you know this one.
I think it's probably more of a collection of memes and clips than a film.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And the third one falls off largely because it's all celebrity cameos and it's just like.
Right. Yeah. It's like the worst Simpsons episodes.
Yes, yeah, it's like the worst Simpsons episodes, exactly.
But, oh, this is the such and such celebrity episode, okay.
Yeah, I think Beyonce makes an appearance in the third one.
Oh, God.
I was like, oh, you know.
And when Tony Blair turns up, that's always fucking depressing. But James Bond is so ripe for parody that it's surprising it doesn't happen more, because watching James Bond is like watching a parody.
Yeah, but one of the versions of Casino Royale was a parody.
The first Bond film to screen,
No, I don't think it was the first one. The first one was before that, but...
Oh, you might be right, yeah.
Anyway,
There is a lot of Bond parodies, but they tend to get lost in the ether.
There was the video game, No One Lives Forever. Do you remember the video game, No One Lives Forever, which was sort of James Bondy, 60s James Bondy parody game? It was quite fun.
Do you know what I reckon to freshen up Bond? They should change the James Bond and make James Bond like a butch biker lesbian.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be just, fucking great.
Just as man, just as like womanizing.
Yeah.
Right. Just, you know, maybe even make her a little bit racist or something. You know, like
if you make him not problematic, it's not James Bond anymore.
Exactly.
But watching James Bond now is deeply uncomfortable because it's I think you've nailed it. That would be perfect.
And maybe make Q, I don't know if this was that, like good, but make Q like a trans cat woman. Because, you know, they're good with computers, so it makes sense, right?
They are good with computers.
Yeah.
They are though, you're not wrong.
But also problematic. I'm not saying, you know.
No, but it's knowingly. It's, you know, it's playing with rather than being.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know, like, yeah, but I for some reason my mind goes, yeah, butch biker lesbian, next James Bond, why not?
Yeah. I think it's gotta be a woman. I think if you want James Bond to still be watchable by normal people, it's got to be, because I can't watch James Bond. Like, sometimes I'll go and watch the really old ones, but it's a hateful watching because it's he's horrible. He's a horrible person.
A lot of it.
I always think of like Alan Partridge when I think of Bond. You know how Alan Partridge, you know, he always sort of idolizes Bond in this way, and I can't watch anything James Bondy without thinking Alan Partridge would love this.
Alan brought something out that was already there, kind of thing. And when you watch it, it's too obvious now.
God, to me, Alan Partridge is just so spot on with his parrot.
I think what's his name? The dude.
Steve Coogan.
Fucking G, like one of our best comedians ever. Like he's just stunningly good. Yeah.
Yeah, I like how when with the Alan Partridge, he does like one of those nasty magazine shows called This Time, and it's like he is like Piers Morgan and Richard Madley, like just you know, maybe a bit of Alan Titchmarsh thrown in, you know, like
yeah,
just,
I was thinking, yeah,
and also just point like I don't care about this, but I am fucking pissed off that Alan Titchmarsh got a knighthood. I'm furious.
He's a piece of shit. He's the thing that like he's always seemed a bit like little Englandy conservative wanker.
He started
writing articles about how video games cause violence, like way after that was like a laughable idea, and it's just
he's a shit gardener decking up everywhere.
That would probably offend him the most out of, you know.
Yeah, no, I think he's basically the reason why people ended up stop watching Gardener's World. Monty Don's just repairing the damage at this point. I love Monty Don. He's great.
Yeah,
to be honest, he would be my man crush, except the fact that I know that he probably loves his wife dearly and would never do anything to jeopardize.
No, the problem with that, that's not the problem with that. The problem with that is you're too fucking similar.
Oh, that'd be maybe.
You are the Monty Don of our, you know.
That's the nicest thing.
That makes me the Titchmarsh, I suppose.
Anyway, no, you're not the Titchmarsh. So you're the Charlie Dimmock.
Oh,
I'm not sure how to take that at all, really.
Yeah, see that.
So many
and
ways.
I'm the dirt.
Excellent. So, just to round up before, because we are we're hitting a long episode here, and we've said a lot of things that were way off target.
Oh God! And I bet we've missed. I feel like we've still missed a lot.
I was just going to say. Well, the one thing I was just going to bring up was clarifying the Holden parts. Because, as I say, okay, I'm pushing it slightly, not spoilery, but at least pushing it to this point so that you get sort of ram home the point that there's a division brewing. This is not just a, you know, it's clear in the episode, but if you don't, if you only talk about one pile of side of it, you don't really walk away thinking about the two sides. But Holden and the others are obviously trying to build a plan where Miller's direction, you know, the investigator comes into it and they can do something or communicate, and that's their thing. And so I think it's not too much of a stretch to say that we're going to see that division being the focus. So
essentially,
of the next
Holden,
episode, you know.
Holden's trying appeasement, and Ashford wants to attack Hitler.
Something like that, but not quite.
Well, so I mean, It's just a station with different opinions.
See, I almost don't want to get into this, but
Eros never happened.
But I almost don't want to get into this, but you know, what's his name? I forgot his name now. Prime Minister.
Chris. That's Chris.
Hitler.
No, before that, Prime Minister of Great Britain. Hitler. When?
Well,
what timeline do you live in? He was, wasn't he?
Oh no!
See the man in the High Castle.
Yeah. Well, in the Chamberlain.
Norwich.
Bloody hell, you guys are.
Hitler likes Norwich.
Yeah. Like I think there was. Now I heard this is only like some guy in a pub told me when I was living.
I mean, it's the German part of England.
Yeah. Well. Basically,
in terms of the Angles, Anglia, the Angles. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, tell me.
Anyway, some guy in a pub said that if Hitler had successfully invaded the UK, there's a substantial chance that he would have considered making Norwich the capital.
There is a thing on. Yeah, there are some places that he was talking. Operation Sea Lion's got a lot of interesting.
I hope that's true.
Interesting,
I
have no idea. Interesting if bizarre plans in it. But you know,
do they have a blue plaque in Norwich that says like Hitler's capital?
Hitler's capital. Because the thing is, I would so usually laugh that thing.
We've got Bernard Matthews and Hitler. Is that what we're saying about?
Alan Partridge.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, it's like this can't possibly like who would make that up.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's wrong or if it's right, but he's got the wrong place.
Maybe.
But it's not entirely wrong. It's not entirely wrong. There are some places in Britain that Hitler thought were good.
I don't want to Google it, and don't comment, because if it's wrong, I don't want to know. It's such an enjoyable idea that it's, and this is why I think people are flat earthers. They just want a more interesting world to live in, and that's fine. Like, you know, I want to believe that.
I think flat earthers have lost control over their lives, and they want some sort of something to cling on.
Well, that's why people vote for Farage, you know.
Well, people vote for us because they just fall for the grift, really, isn't it?
That's what the flat Earth thing is. It's a grift. Nobody's getting anything out of it, but other than
That's why I don't think it's a grift. I think it's like people who are, you know, you meet otherwise rational people. This is going to sound more dismissive than I intended.
Around here, there's a lot of people who are really into
astrology, and I think it's a fun hobby rather than like. And it's like believing in Santa Claus. You've got to make yourself believe in it a bit for it to be a fun hobby. But it's fundamental. It's just a fun hobby. And it's harmless.
Yeah. Actually, there's a guy.
I
think it's harmless.
Well, flat earth.
Unless you literally astrology.
Right.
Our friend Reagan. There's my
argument against astrology.
If you make political decisions based on astrology, that's a problem.
But people make life decisions based on it.
Our friend Jason the farmer, he's quite into astrology, so you know we don't want to discredit.
I don't want to offend anybody who's a superstitious nonsense person like religions and astrology.
Astrology is no different than asking God for advice.
I never said it was. This is the thing people say, no, I know. I know it isn't.
But when I say that, I mean something different to what Hamish means when he says that. When I say it's the same thing, I'm like, and it's all cool. And Hamish is like, and it's all bollocks.
We need to rewind a bit.
I'm hovering over the stop button. I'll tell you that much.
Oh no! There's a guy on a podcast I listen to who he goes ghost hunting, and that's not what